I wonder, yeah, we've been in the baseball community, the Dodgers have you guys agree that the Dodgers have been kind of like the ones that they've gotten there, they just haven't been able to lay down the hammer?
I mean, I feel like that's the Dodgers just like in general.
Yeah.
Like, you think about how many times, granted, they how many World Series have they won? Seven?
You know what? That's a good question. I can't tell you for sure.
I think it's seven. I'm not sure. It might be six, and this was going to be their seventh. I don't know. But they always seem to be the team that makes the playoffs and, like, forms their own run. Yeah. But they can never, like, get over the hump. Like, for as long as I can remember, they've, you know, been in the NLDS, NLCS. Now they're in the World Series, but they haven't found, like, whatever it is to give just, like, that final push. Like, yeah. This was even just down to a game. But, I mean, in years past, it's been more. But this, you kind of have to think that it's not the players.
You know what, though? Honestly, the way that this team has gone this year as to previous years, I give a lot of credit to manager Dave Roberts. I think he did a phenomenal job this year. You get to Game 7 of the World Series, and it's a crapshoot. It really is, in terms of, you know, what can you really expect from a team? And in my opinion, I think Dave Roberts did everything he could. I think that it just bothers me that the only thing that bothers me is the Clayton Kershaw thing. Because especially with the amount of money you pay him, to me, his salary alone justifies why you would bring him in to start Game 7 of the World Series. That's why you pay him that money. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They had so many great things happen to them this year, because think about how much better they got after they found, you know, Cody Bellinger. I mean, all these young players. Yasiel Puig easily had the best year of his career in terms of consistency. You know, he was a guy that, you know, people kind of, like, he came into the league, was a big deal, and then kind of faded away. And then
he was sent down to the minors last year, wasn't he?
I thought he was sent out of the minors this year.
The beginning of this year, yeah.
Oh,
and then he came back and he finished strong. I mean, guys like Jock Peterson, Corey Seager, I mean, just crazy good. I mean, behind the plate, you have Austin Barnes. I mean, a guy who barely made an appearance in the postseason was Andre Ethier. Remember when Andre Ethier was a big deal? Yeah. The fact that they're that good and they don't have to have those older players playing, it's exciting, because if you're a Dodgers fan, you know that you're going to be in contention next year and the year after that, because they have this base for it. Mm-hmm. But again, you have to kind of keep watch, because think about, we said that about the Cubs last year.
And they fell apart.
And they didn't look good. And now you're at this point with Chicago where not only do they have these aging players in John Lester and John Lackey, but they also have free agent issues where people are going to be leaving. Jake Arrieta is probably going to be gone. And all of a sudden, this base that you had built, these four pillars, as Theo Epstein described them, are all of a sudden, you know, going away. Mm-hmm. And it's that window that's closing. Mm-hmm. Think about the Cleveland Indians. You know, this really was their biggest window for a championship, and that closed. So the fact that, you know, baseball so much in sometimes in just the odds are so slim of consistently getting back there. And again, it goes back to Kershaw. You got to know how hard it is to get here. And the fact that you didn't pull out all the stops, to me, is disappointing, because I think it takes away from the game. I mean, think about Game 7 last year.
Mm-hmm.
Both teams really pulled out all of the stops. I mean
it went into extra innings.
Yeah. And I mean, it just, that to me, it never gets better than that. As exciting as Game 5 was, exciting as Game 2 was, where the, you know, the score was, it seemed like no lead was safe, to me, when everything's on the line in Game 7 and you see stuff like that happen, with like that Rajay Davis game-tying home run, that's the stuff you remember. And to me, the Astros showed up to play, and it just, to me, didn't feel like the Dodgers offensively or defensively really had that fire.
Well, the one thing that I can say in the coaching staff's, like, just to kind of get in their heads as to why they didn't start Kershaw, if you look at Game 5, he only made it 4 2/3 innings. I think the score was 7-7, or it was 7-4, but then the next batter hit a 3-run home run, and it was 7-7 after that, which is essentially his fault. When you have that rocky of a start, I can kind of understand bringing in also easily could be a number one anywhere else in Yu Darvish. Have him kind of shut down the first few innings and then bring in Clayton Kershaw to bring you the rest of the way, because now he's comfortable. You know, guys have been like, there's chances that the Dodgers could have scored. Maybe at that point, you know, by the third, fourth inning, they have a 2-3 run lead that Clayton Kershaw can come in and be the rock that he, for whatever reason, wasn't earlier in the series. Mm. So, like, in that sense, I understand why they did it, but in every other way, it makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly the point is. And the worst part for the Dodgers is the fact that because that was the last game of the season, you know that baseball experts are going to sit there all summer and talk about why didn't they do it. And they're going to sit there and think all summer about why didn't they do it. And, you know, that's the tough
coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Exactly. And that's the interesting thing with baseball is, you know, you could still throw out all, you know, take out all the stops and lose. That's just the way it goes. But in other baseball news, Will, I'm sure you're kind of sort of paying attention to this. I know, you know, with in terms of Philly sports, there's more exciting things going on, you know, like the Eagles.
Oh, wait. Are you talking about the Philly's new manager?
Yes.
How they hired a Greek god to be their manager?
Well, you know, and
that's
it was
what everyone's calling him. I don't know why.
Who is it?
Gabe
Kapler.
Kapler.
So I'm a big fan of Gabe Kapler.
He played for the Rays and the Yankees?
And the Red Sox.
Oh, okay.
He played for the Red Sox back in, I believe it was 07, back when they won. It was one of their World Series.
He's a really young guy.
Yeah.
42 years old.
Yeah, he played, he played for the Sox in 04. So that's, he's a legend. And in 05 and 06.
Was he with the Rays before that or after that?
He went Tigers for a year, Rangers from 2000 to 2002, the Rockies from 2002 to 2003, the Sox 03, 04. He went to Japan for a year and then back to the Red Sox and then Milwaukee. He finished his career in Tampa.
What year? Was it 2008?
2010.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's really ironic.
Why did they call him the Greek god?
I don't know, but that's just what everyone's been saying.
He's from Hollywood, California.
Yeah, he's 42 years old, though. So you're right, young guy.
In terms of, if you look back at the rest of the Phillies baseball managers, you have Pete. I don't like. Then you have Ryan. What's his face? Sandberg, and Charlie Manuel before him. All these really old guys. So, hey, it's change. He could be a Chip Kelly. I don't really know, but. Anything to make this team better.
And
I'm okay
the interesting
with.
Thing is all right. So after his after he was done playing in 2013, he coached the Israeli national baseball team in the 2013 World Baseball Classic qualifier, in which they lost.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did not qualify.
Right.
Then he tried to start a company, eGraphs, which was a technology startup focused on electronic signatures.
Hmm.
And then about a year later, it shut down. And then he decided he wanted to go into TV. So he would appear on Fox Sports Live for about a year. and then he became the Dodgers director of player development. And I believe that's where he's been until now. So, again, really good thing going there. And what I like is the Phillies were the very last team to really adopt sabermetrics and statistics. They were the very last team. And Kapler's known as a stats guy. They brought him on Fox Sports Live as a stats guy, and he did so well with the Dodgers because he was a stats guy. And to me, with a lot of young players who really don't know where the right spot is, if you can take the numbers and say this is where the right place to go, I think that's great. I think in terms of where you're going to see Philly perform next year, I think you're going to see an improvement because I think that they're doing what the Astros did, which was be more analytic-based, and look where that led them. You know, they were... Think about it. 3 years ago, they were a 100-loss team for three straight years, and now they're World Series champions. That's how quick people think. You know, you look at, like, the Pirates, and you go, it's really hard for a turnaround.
No.
Not if you do it right.
Yeah, if you just need the right group of people.
You need the right group of people, and that doesn't mean players. That means coaching staff. That means people front you're putting office. Around. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So I'm a big fan.
Yeah, the one thing, I mean, I'm not a fan of Matt Klentak. That's just me.
Okay.
Because he has kind of been trying to promote this, look at the future, and here's all the great things we have. But then you look, and there are, you know, 24, 25-year-olds that are still in the minor leagues, and you ask, why? Like, why? Like, that was a big thing this season, at least throughout the summer when we weren't talking about the Sixers and the Eagles. That was the biggest question people had, was why do we have these guys that we know aren't going to do anything when we have all of this potential sitting in Lehigh Valley and Reading that you could bring up and teach how to play professional baseball with professional baseball. Like, if we're going to lose, we might as well learn something from it. And if there are two people out of the entire team that I would love for the new manager to get rid of, it would be Tommy Joseph, because I don't think he's that good, and Odubel Herrera, because I think he's cocky.
Really? Herrera?
I would get rid of him. I think he's cocky, and I don't think he's as good as he thinks he is.
I don't know, dude. I'm a big fan of Odubel Herrera in terms of, I mean, his contributions are really good. His fielding percentage is really good. He had two errors in all of last year. I mean, that's pretty good. He hit .281. Yeah, I mean, for a young guy. I mean, I know he's not, you know, in terms of, like, younger guys, not. But I know. Who was it that said he's not the guy to build a team around? There was someone that came out and said it.
I don't think it was about Odubel Herrera.
It was
No, it was about him. Then there, I don't think it was Colin Cowherd. I completely forget who it was. But then somebody else said that Freddy Galvis couldn't be a leader on the team because he doesn't speak English. But that also might have been about Odubel Herrera. I'm not entirely sure. But, I mean, I don't know. I always, with the whole, like, because his big thing is bat flips.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I get it, you know, it's a funny thing, like, you know, celebrations for touchdowns in football or whatever, but it just seems with Odubel Herrera, when he's cold, he's freezing, and when he's hot, he's as good as guys in other teams normally are, and it's like, I get that he's this fiery player that might, you know, pump other people up. But to me, it just seems like, okay, you're on the worst team in baseball. Stop focusing on how to make your bat fly after you hit a ball and focus on hitting a ball.
So the thing I noticed is I'm looking at his stats right now. 2 years ago, his WAR was 3.9,
mm-hmm.
which is great, mm-hmm. especially for a guy as young as he is. The year after that, it was 3.8, and then this year it dropped to 2.8, which, mm-hmm. you know, again, isn't horrible. 2.8 WAR, a 2 means you're a starter. You should be a starter mm-hmm. if you're producing a 2 WAR. So that means he's above the average starter. Now, you get closer to a 4 and a 5, that makes you, you know, all-star material.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, he needs to return to those numbers. And a lot of it comes from, I think, right now it looks like stolen bases, where his BSR rating, which is rating stolen bases, was mm-hmm. a 2.1 and a 2.6. This year it was a 0.6.
Yeah, well, because he ignores the first and third base coaches that say don't steal.
Yeah, and also the 22.4% strikeout percentage is really high.
Yeah.
So, but again, how old is he's 25 years old. I mean, he was literally born in 1991. And you guys have him until 2021. It's a 5-year, $30 million deal with 2 option years. So theoretically, you can get rid of him next year and the year after that, which I think is a good option. You know what? You give him one more year, and let's say he doesn't, because then he's 26, 27, he doesn't end up being the full-on star that you think he's going to be. Mm-hmm. But in a team in a rebuild, he's a great player because he's going to contribute. He could be one of those key pieces. And if not, you can just get rid of him. You know, and he helps. What he does is he sells tickets. He keeps the team decent. So, you know, it helps the other younger players around him feel less pressure to improve, you know? But I like Odubel Herrera. I think that I'd like to say watch out for next year. But I don't, it's hard to say in baseball. Yeah. It really is. You know, you want to look at the trends. I mean, like Andrew McCutchen is, I think, a prime one where he's been trending down since 2013. And the way his trend was this year was he was supposed to do really, really bad. But he kind of, he plateaued in terms of badness, which sounds really horrible.
Can
but
you
I
ever
think,
plateau? At, well, at zero.
Yeah. At zero. Yeah. But it just seems like McCutchen right now will be stuck at about a 270 hitter for the rest of his career. Which is why I think the Pirates should get rid of him.
Which isn't terrible, but
no,
still.
It's not.
But if you're what you're paying Andrew McCutchen, it's terrible. Yeah. Because think about it. You're paying Odubel Herrera a lot less money, and he's producing higher. So, point proven there that at least Odubel Herrera is producing better than the Pirates center fielder, who also is really bad defensively. And I hate everyone that's saying, we're happy with his defense. I'm like, the defense wasn't good.
No.
The metrics say it, but...
Yeah, right. The other player I just want to get your opinion on was Tommy Joseph, because he's like, I can stand Odubel Herrera if he's here. I can't stand Tommy Joseph.
Tommy Joseph doesn't play that much, does he? I was looking at
He's the primary first baseman.
His WAR is horrible. That's the first thing I'm going to say.
When I saw him, and it was over the summer, I saw him play against the Nationals. His batting average was borderline 200.
Yeah.
And he was the number he's the cleanup.
He doesn't, you know, people like him because he hits home runs, but it's 20.
But it doesn't happen. He doesn't hit that many home runs. And when you're the replacement for Ryan Howard.
I mean, that's hard. I'll give him that, but he's still not great.
Even close.
His OBP is 299. His average was his OBP was 289. His average was 240. Those things are not good. His batting average on balls in play was 280. His BSR, his base running, was -4.4.
He's so slow. That's the other thing.
And he's costing runs. He's almost costing one win with his base running alone. And along with that, so you add his WAR in there, which is -1.1. His offense and his defense have earned just horrible ratings.
Saw him steal a base, and I got my degree first.
Okay, can we just take a second, though, and look at Ryan Howard's statistics after they won the World Series?
Okay,
Ryan Howard wasn't good after
the World Series is a completely different thing. 2009, he tore his ACL.
Well, but still, that's over half.
Oh, that was sad, by the way.
That's like 60% of his career. You're going to judge someone off of 2 or 3 years of their career?
Well, when they're as bad as Tommy Joseph's have been, and they haven't had a... Like, Ryan Howard had an area where he was good first, and then he went into his decline.
He was very good.
He was very good. And then they signed him to what I think is the worst contract in history. Yeah. But when you're 26 years old and you've yet to really prove that you can put together a good season, I think you... I mean, he was a lot better in 2016 than he was in 2017, but that... Again,
means you're going from really, really bad to really bad.
No, he went from like a little bit below average to like significantly below average.
Really?
Yeah, because it was a 0.8 WAR, which again, it's a little bit like he shouldn't be a starter, but you know, if a guy with a 0.8 WAR is a great role player, and then he went to a -1.1, and guys who bring in negative, you really shouldn't bring in consistently.
No,
because then
he's the primary first baseman.
Yeah. So Tommy Joseph, really great bench player. I say you bring him in if you need a big
hit
late.
He's like Matt Stairs.
Ryan Howard also had a quarter of his seasons in the negative wars.
But how many of those were after the World Series?
All of them.
Exactly. And that's our argument here.
That's all that matters. Yeah. 2008 is all that matters.
In terms of, there's no argument in the fact that the Phillies should not have re-signed Ryan Howard after the World Series because of how badly he performed. They signed him a huge deal, and he
should have been re-signed. It shouldn't have been for that long.
He shouldn't have been re-signed for that much money.
No.
Either, because you look at the numbers and you can see that he was going down. And he was older when they signed him. And yeah.
They didn't sign him right after the World Series. Mm-mm. It was like 2010 or 2011.
It was 2010.
Yeah. And they signed him to, it was like seven years?
It was a 7-year deal.
Yeah. Which is outrageous considering I think he was almost 30 at the time.
He was mid-30s. He was 35.
Already?
Yeah.
Okay, that even makes it worse because I thought he was in his late 20s.
So, because that's the thing. So they've done studies because this is what they do in baseball now is they do studies.
There's enough time to
do
studies.
And they find about the age between 28 and 30 is when you reach your peak. And after you reach your 30s, it's pretty much a consistent decline.
Pitchers often happen a lot quicker than batters.
Yes, and starters a lot faster than relievers because of the strain on the arm. If you have Tommy John surgery, you're basically done. The second one, very few people have ever come back. Daniel Hudson for the Pirates, one of the very rare players that's still out there that has had Tommy John surgery twice. Just something that's kind of fun to note.
Also, because the Pirates, I was looking up the All-Star rosters of the teams. Out of the 50 players, 5 of them were on the Pirates in the past, 2 years. I thought that was just...
I think the Phillies... That's fun. Phillies might have had one each year.
A lot of that comes with winning. When you're winning and people are paying attention to your team, you have All-Stars. Yeah. I don't think that, to me, the numbers speak out more. And to me... What's great about the Phillies, I think they did a great job this year. They had guys like Helixson and they had guys like Buchholz that were guys on 1-year deals that were basically there to be fillers while you build your team. You know, guys that keep the record, keep the morale up a little bit, have their experience kind of teach some people. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to start seeing some of those guys get phased out and you're going to start seeing that new generation. And that's why the Phillies brought in a new manager too. It's because it's kind of that, it's this whole new regime change here. And it's exciting if you're a Phillies fan.
Yeah.
I love how much we end up talking about Philly sports now, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. But you I think it's interesting. You look at from 2008 until 2015. The Phillies literally declined every single stage that you can decline in. It's 2008, they won the World Series. 2009, they lost the World Series. 2010, they lost the NLCS. 2011, they lost the NLDS. 2012, they had a 100-win season. Then 13, they were second in the division. 14, they were third. 15, they were fourth. 16, they were the worst team in baseball and last. And 17, they were slightly better, but still the worst team in baseball and still last.
They had a better record in 2016 than they did 15. How did they get the worst team in baseball in 16?
Because the Braves got a little better.
That's it. They were only 20 games under 500, though. I mean, that's...
They're still the worst team in baseball.
That must have been a really good year. I don't know. We were talking about these new generations. How many of you remember when you probably don't when Jason Kendall came through and with the Pirates?
I don't know. I barely know the Phillies prior to 2005.
Okay. Let alone look at your hometown teams. I mean, there's a whole new generation.
Well, yeah. Why do you think I was so excited about Gabe Kapler going to the Phillies?
Well, makes me feel old, man.
That's, I know. That's also true. I know, dude.
Because I remember when Freddie Galvis was this young guy that could do things, and then he was on PEDs and got suspended, and then you didn't hear from him again until he was he's our leader of our team because everyone else is old and gone.
I mean, you remember when Donovan McNabb was still thrown around. I remember when Hines Ward was
throwing touchdown passes. Antonio Holmes.
I mean, that was mind-blowing.
Jerome Bettis, dude. Ugh.
Which could be a nice little segue here. Now that we're at the halfway point of the NFL season.
Oh, he's segueing.
I'm mind blown. I never thought, the Jaguars, let alone the Bills, would be in the playoff contention
and
at this
hold
point.
Hold on. Can we talk about one thing, too?
Yeah.
How mind-blowing. Because you know what? Usually the NFL trade deadline goes by, and you're nothing happened.
Man.
How mind-blowing was this deadline? Jay Ajayi to the Eagles, Kelvin Benjamin to the Bills, Jimmy Garoppolo. The Patriots have no backup quarterback.
No, you realize their backup at this point would be Julian Edelman.
No, it wouldn't
be. He's hurt.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. My goodness.
Jeez Louise.
I think it's also interesting to note, so the Patriots got a second-round pick from the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, they turned down two first-round picks from the Browns. Let's just be clear.
But you look, the Browns offered a second and a third for A.J. McCarron.
Oh, I don't even know what, like, what.
What?
I
what? How? Why? Like, how is that? And the fact that if you look at the Eagles trade, you have to think back to last year, long time ago, Eagles traded Sam Bradford.
Ah, the memories.
They got a first and a fourth round pick for Sam Bradford. You want to know what that turned into?
Yes.
Derek Barnett, who is
playing very well,
if not a starter, will be a starter within a year. And Jay Ajayi for Sam Bradford. That's what it turned into.
That's phenomenal.
Like,
and the fact that
I've had my issues with Howie Roseman before, but like the past 2 years, 3 years, he's just been like going crazy, and I love it.
I mean, there were so many like interesting just trades. I mean, you knew the Seahawks were going out for a left tackle. You knew mm-hmm. that, and you knew that they were willing to trade Jimmy Graham. Why didn't the Steelers say, hey, let's go get – I mean
– That's not the Steelers, though. The Steelers – Kevin Colbert will never be the guy that goes and makes the trade.
I know.
That's just not his style.
Villanueva's in his prime, if not reaching his prime. He's a very good left tackle, and we could have gotten a very good tight end to kind of show Jesse James the ropes.
But my problem is again – Jimmy Graham really hasn't been relevant since he went to Seattle. I'm not saying he couldn't be relevant again in Pittsburgh, but I see more of a value in a left tackle than a mm-hmm. tight end.
I agree. I hate that I'm pulling the Eagles into this conversation, but I have to. Because you have to look at Jason Peters, who tore his MCL and his ACL. And I think it's the second time he tore his ACL in that leg. Now you have Vitae as your backup, who didn't really shock the world when he came in last year for Lane Johnson. So I put a huge value on linemen in general, not even just left tackles, but linemen in general.
It's a really hard position to play, and I don't think they get enough credit for what they do. And I don't think they get paid enough for what they do.
Can we talk about how big Alejandro Villanueva is, though? That guy is massive.
Is he 6'6 or 6'8?
6'7.
6'7. Oh, I was right.
He was an Army Ranger.
Yeah.
I'd be scared.
Can you imagine that with 100 pounds of gear and a gun running at
I'm running the other way, dude. Yeah, I'm running the other way.
I would be terrified. If I saw a 6'8 Army Ranger come near me, like...
Yeah, I'm surrendering. Oh. I didn't even do anything. I could be on the same team, and I'd be like...
All right, we're good. You're good.
Cheerleader. Okay. Also, I mean, the Jags made a move, and I don't know how...
I didn't hear about that.
It was a low,
enlighten us,
low key
Sam.
Great move. They traded with the Bills defensive tackle Marcel Darius.
Oh, I did hear about this
from the Bills for a sixth round pick. You're adding to an already stacked defense who's doing pretty well.
And
year. You
only gave up a sixth round pick.
A sixth round.
You know,
pick.
In terms of what you're getting, because Darius was a first round draft pick. The Bills, I see where they're doing it because there really wasn't a spot for him anymore. Their D line's phenomenal, and Darius has been a letdown. Just food for thought here. They were one pick away from getting Von Miller. The Bills were.
Ooh.
It was Von Miller. They were going to take Von Miller, but the Broncos took him just ahead. Think about where the Buffalo Bills would be right now if they had a Super Bowl MVP on their team.
Hey, fun fact about the Broncos. Their starting quarterback this week is Brock Osweiler.
I know. That, you
How
know
did
that's
that
another
Hold
fun
on.
One.
Here's a very fun fact about that fun fact. He is being paid almost $900,000 to start against the Philadelphia Eagles by the Browns.
If anyone won that deal, it was the Broncos.
The Browns. The Browns are paying him to start for another team.
I will say, though, the Browns did a really great job in the fact that they knew they weren't going to play this year, so they traded for him. They got picks. And they're just he's eating salary right now.
Yeah, well, they have the highest cap the highest space because they don't pay anyone. They just go out and get poopy players.
Can you never say poopy ever again?
Oh, would you rather me say the alternative that I can't say on the radio?
You could say cruddy. You cruddy. Could say bad. You could say terrible. You could say crap. Yeah, that's
okay.
But never say poopy.
Okay. No. Now here's another food for thought. We're halfway through the season. I just want to get your thoughts on a couple things. Obviously, you know, we predicted who we liked at the beginning of the year to see a Super Bowl, and I still like the Pennsylvania Super
I said
Bowl.
Tampa Bay making a run, and that is not happening. R.I.P. Jameis Winston, Doug Martin, that entire
Jackson. Team. Well, they've had a decent season on offense since Doug Martin came
back. I blame Nick Folk partially.
Oh, well, yeah. Nick Folk. I mean, O.J. Howard has had a pretty good rookie year. I don't know if you've been following O.J. Howard. I've been looking at him on my waiver wire on my fantasy league if I ever need a...
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
What team's been your biggest shock as in terms of like how well they've done this season?
The Jets.
See, to me, besides the Jets, because the Jets are kind of... They're on a three-game losing streak. They're kind of starting to fade from relevance.
Good.
To me, it's the Chicago Bears.
Really?
Three wins and... I mean, they beat the Steelers, which at first, to me, was a complete and utter disappointment. And same with that Jaguars loss. But now you look at how well both those teams are playing. And to me, it's shocking because they went out and they dominated the Baltimore Ravens as well. And to me, that's just impressive.
Did they win this week against the Lions?
They did not play the Lions this week. The Steelers did.
That's who I'm asking. Sorry.
Yeah, Steelers won. You know who my biggest shock is? And I don't know if it really is a big shock, but I'm going to say the Los Angeles Rams.
You know what? I agree.
Yeah,
5-2,
agree
first in the NFL. I mean, tied with Seattle, obviously. But they've had, like, decent wins. They beat the Cowboys 35-30. They beat the Jaguars, who have the number one defense fantasy football-wise in the league. But they also shut out the Cardinals.
What-wise?
Fantasy football.
Fantasy football. Okay.
They shut out the Cardinals 33-0 in Arizona. And I know that isn't a big deal, but Arizona is
33-0 is always going to be a big deal,
in my opinion. In Arizona and a shutout. They're 3-0 away from home. You're 3-0 away from home. I don't know if I mean.
They took all of the power that the Chargers had.
Yeah. I mean,
what little they had left. And
yeah. And you got to take a look. Take a look at Jared Goff, too. His numbers aren't spectacular, but think about it. Okay, all of last year, which I know he started late last year, he had a 54.6% completion percentage. He had 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions. This year, he has a 60% completion percentage, 1,800 yards, 9 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions, and a 90.3 passer rating compared to his 63.6. And again, I think when you're talking about who won between the Eagles and the Rams in terms of who their quarterbacks picked, there's no doubt it's the Eagles. But I still think the Rams are getting a ton of value out of Jared Goff now that you have Jeff Fisher gone. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just right now, I like the Rams. I do. I think they'll be a team that low-key keep an eye on. I'm not saying the Rams are going to win a Super Bowl, but I think they'll be fun to watch in the playoffs.
I don't know which week we play the Rams, but the Eagles play the Rams at some point this year.
And I believe it's in L.A.
Yeah, it's in L.A.
Yeah, it's in L.A. December 10th, 4:25.
Ooh, right before my birthday.
Nice.
But, I mean, they're in a somewhat decent division. I mean, they have Seattle, Arizona, and San Francisco. Obviously, San Francisco is on the decline this year. But, I mean, Los Angeles, they have 212 points for. I don't know how that compares to the rest of the NFL, but it leads their division by 50 points.
Which is impressive considering you have a team like Seattle, which put up, 44 points last week against Houston?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, this NFL season has been really exciting in the fact that, you know what, everyone expected, one, the New England Patriots just to come out and dominate everyone, which they're winning, but they haven't dominated everyone. I mean, they should have lost to Tampa Bay. They should be 3 losses right now.
They should have lost to the Jets, too.
They should have lost to the Jets. And to me, that's why they went out and, you know, I guess tried, made this move, trade Jimmy G. They kind of realized, I think, as much as they're like, you know, Tom Brady's going to play a little bit longer, I think they realize that if they want Tom Brady to play a little longer, they need to get him some help because he's getting hit more this year than he has in his entire career. And that will eventually lead to injury, which will eventually lead to you having no quarterback, which will eventually lead to you being a 2-14 team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the I just looked it up. The Rams have the fourth highest points for.
And that's, I mean, the fact that they have an offense that's like that, but also at the same time, their defense is going toe-to-toe with Seattle right now. Seattle's only allowed 132 points in that division, and they've only allowed 138. That's impressive.
The Patriots are above them, the Chiefs are above them, and then the Eagles are above them. But I also want to note, and I didn't – this isn't something you think about, but their point differentials. Throughout the whole season, they're number two in the league. They are only behind the Eagles by 2 points. And I was talking about their home and away record. You know what else is really important to – I mean, you have to have a good record. And I think we've said this before, but division record. Look at the teams that are atop the –
They're in the NFC West.
Yeah.
So they're with
the Seahawks, the 49ers, and the Cardinals.
They're 2-1 in their division. But, I mean, even look at other teams.
Did they lose to the Seahawks?
Yeah, but it was only like 16-14. It wasn't like that bad of a game.
It was close. Okay.
But, I mean, like the Eagles and the Steelers, the two top teams in their respective conferences, they're 3-0 in their division. You have to have and I know we were talking, this trickles down from the professional level to the college level, and you know how we were talking about with basketball and such. That's what you have to do to be good. You have to win in your division, in your conference.
He's 100% right, because look at teams like the New England Patriots. What have they done consistently throughout this really era of domination is they win the division every year.
Yeah.
I think there's been, one instance since 2001 in which they haven't won the division and missed the playoffs, and that was when Tom Brady got hurt. And I think the other time besides, so it was two times. It was 2008 and 2003. And those are the only times since 2001. And that's unprecedented. And that's why they've been so good. And you look at, again, why the Eagles are playing so well is typically, I mean, last year you saw them lose those tight games to the Redskins, the Giants, the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. And this year they've won all of those games, and that is why they are 7-1 and at the top of their division and the top of the league is because they win, and those are the most important games. And that does not change no matter where you are. When half your schedule is division opponents, I mean, you have to do well against division.
Well, and if you look at another aspect, you have Ezekiel Elliott, who is suspended yet again. I don't know if he was reinstated.
He is not.
He is not.
I believe he's actually going to be suspended this time.
Wow.
I know. I didn't think it was going to happen.
And the Cowboys play the Eagles at least once in the next 6 weeks, because they play, and it's in Dallas. That's the game in Dallas. So if this sticks and he actually is suspended for the next month and a half, then the only time he will play the Eagles is the last game of the season. And by that point, it might not matter. Because if the Eagles keep going on this tear, then the last game of the season, they're going to have the division wrapped up. Like, even if the Cowboys are in second and we split the division, like the record, like 1-1 against them, they're still going to have a better overall, and that's all that's going to matter.
Yeah.
Now, real quick, just my last thing on the NFL, because this is what I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Rookies are doing really well this year, I think. This is a good draft class. Let me hear your mid-year offense and defensive rookie of the years.
Hold on. Let me take a look here. I would say number one, first and foremost, Deshaun Watson.
Deshaun Watson has
played out of his. And you're right.
Kareem Hunt's a rookie.
Yeah, that's something you don't think about, because I thought he was like a later draft pick, wasn't he? I mean, he wasn't a Tom Brady, but he wasn't a.
You know what? First round. You know who else has played very well? Is Leonard Fournette.
Mm-hmm.
Leonard Fournette's been very good.
And I know a lot of people were. I mean, like I said, this draft class has been really good. I know a lot of people were wondering how Leonard Fournette would do in Jacksonville. He's done phenomenal. Dalvin Cook, before he got injured, I think
Christian McCaffrey has been doing pretty well. I mean, it's a tough situation in Carolina when you're competing for running against Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for coming into that system, I think he's been playing very well.
I will say, though, you know who's been a letdown is Christian McCaffrey.
Really? Why would you? Because I just said I thought he was playing well.
I thought he was playing well, too.
In terms of, like, they were talking about him being rookie of the year, I don't think he has a shot.
Oh, see, I didn't think about that. I'm just saying he's having a good year coming into Carolina. I don't think he's number one, but.
Yeah, I think Deshaun Watson, definitely offensive rookie of the year. Defensive rookie of the year, I'm not being biased here, but I honestly think T.J. Watt has.
T.J. Watt has been amazing.
I mean, the only person that comes close is maybe Malik Hooker.
Yeah, and I don't know defensive guys as well.
But. I mean, Malik Hooker, I think he's three interceptions, but like J.J. Watt also has like four sacks, and when you look at the Steelers' defense, one of the biggest, especially with all the injuries that have – not all the injuries, but like the minor injuries that have happened, I think – T.J. Watt has really stepped up and filled the role of – or he's not living in his brother's shadow.
You know who he reminds me of? Trent Cole.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're – Sam, do you remember Trent Cole at all? No? Trent Cole was – I think because T.J. Watt's an outside linebacker, or is he
defensive end? No, he's a defensive end. He's
okay. Plays That's what – Trent Cole was left end and –
built like just a linebacker, like though.
Yeah, he wasn't like a big like lineman dude. He was a speed type guy, and he was terrifying.
And I like those types of players. I like the defensive ends that are linebackers. But I mean, I'm giving the Emmy music now. I think it's our. Is it our time to go?
It is our time to go.
We rode here, guys.
Hey, somebody to look out for in the next probably 5 or 6 years. Is Jeremiah Trotter Jr., Jeremiah Trotter III, I think. He's a linebacker playing at St. Joe's Prep in Philly. He's in high school right now. But he apparently, from what I've been hearing, he's like a monster.
All right, well, you guys have heard it here first from my very own Mel Kiper Jr.
You know who someone else to look out for is? Tiger Woods, because he is back, baby. World Hero Classic.
I'm voting he gets cut in the second round. After he'll miss the cut.
He'll totally miss the cut.
But on that note, sorry, Tiger. This is Sam Anthony signing off. I love you, Mrs. Ferentz.
Why you gotta say that, man? This is Sam Ferentz Actuary signing off. Go Colonials. Love you, Mom.
And this is Will Camilleri signing off. Happy birthday, Mom.
Wait, is it actually your mom's birthday?
It's actually my mom's
Mrs.
birthday.
Mrs. Camilleri!
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Camilleri.
All right. And on that note, we wish Mrs. Camilleri a happy birthday, and we will see you all next Tuesday. So stay tuned.